Understanding a child the occupational therapy way, recognizing and communicating the unique potential of a child. An interview with the author Sabrina Adair, interviewed by former CBC radio host Judy Madron.
Sabrina, I'm quite intrigued with this book as the mother of four children who are grown, clearly, and you're the mother of four children under 14. Tell me a little bit more about you.
So I am an occupational therapist. I specialize in pediatrics. So I specialize in working with kids and parents. I've worked in a number of settings. I've worked in the school board. I've worked in home settings, community settings, friends and groups. And so I've been doing occupational therapy for just over 18 years now. And as well, a mom of four, like you said, and a busy entrepreneur starting my own company recently to provide these services to parents.
And I take it you're pretty good at organizing your time.
It's all about prioritizing and putting things, what you need to do first, and making sure that you do the things that are most important.
And what is most important to you?
So I have a passion for my children, first and foremost, is making sure that children are seen and heard for who they are. And I've learned a lot as a mom of my four kids, each individually uniquely made, but very different. And so getting to know them, understanding them, learning about them, and then working with all the children and families that I work with, I realized how unique an individual every child is. And so my priority is to make sure that these kids, my kids and the kids that I work with and the kids all around, are seen and heard for who they are, because they're all beautiful individual people.
You know, the last almost 2 years have been tough for just about everybody, with our usual way of doing things modified. Sometimes it's quite uncomfortable. I often just wanted to retreat with a book, but you wrote one. So on top of a private practice, four children to care for, and COVID-19 challenges, you spoke about what's important to you, but what really impelled you to get this written?
Well, one of the things I realized is that over the last couple of years, and COVID making an even greater impact, was that parents and children couldn't get the resources necessarily that they needed. So we had a cut in services, we had a limit on how much we could access services. And on top of it, then parents were forced to, you know, get involved in things that they normally wouldn't be necessarily part of. So with the schooling coming home for a bit. And what I realized over that is that we really need to get a sense from a family perspective, from a parenting perspective, and even from a teacher perspective, each child was experiencing this whole situation so differently. And so we need to really understand how each child experiences things, experiences the world, each child, you know, learns through the things that they're doing, how each child, you know, what their behaviors are trying to tell us. And what happened is that the parents began to see so much of the things that they never saw before. And so why I thought this was important is because I felt like we needed to have some guidance for parents to be able to look at something and to be able to understand a little bit more about their own child. And then from what they've learned, be able to communicate that to other people. So figuring out the words that can describe their child. And then when you figure out what describes your child, then the people that are around them can also get to know your child or learn or help your child or support them in the best way possible. And so just over COVID, I realized that this became more and more prominent and more necessary. And so I had the opportunity to write this book, and I wanted to get this into the hands of parents.
And you mentioned seeing things that you hadn't noticed before. Did that happen for you in your own family?
My kids would come home from school and say, you know, they're doing just fine. They were flying under the radar. Sometimes it was not behaviors. They would go to school and they would be at school. And what happened was they realized that there was a divide between where they were supposed to be and what they were and where they actually were. And because they didn't have the behaviors, they weren't really noticeable in the school setting. And so when I ended up spending one-on-one time with them, I noticed that there were some gaps in the learning. And when I did that, I realized some of the extra things that could help my children to succeed better in school. And then I developed the words to be able to then tell the teachers when they go back to school or when they went back to school, to be able to say to them, these are the things that he may need or she may need to be able to support her learning and so that they can succeed a little bit better.
Can you give me an example?
So my My one son has the difficulties with multiple levels of instruction. So if you have, you know, three things that you're telling a student to do, for example, you know, take out a piece of paper, write your name on the top, and then start writing a paragraph about your favorite memory. Well, those are three instructions. And so oftentimes my son would take out a paper, write his name on the top, but the third instruction was gone. And so one of those things was that I realized that he would sit there and wait until somebody repeated that third instruction. And so some children, and I see this often in my practice as well, some children can only do one instruction at a time, some can do two instructions, some can do three. And one of the things I did with my son is I would write the instructions down at the top of the paper, and then he could just check it off as he went through. So if there was multiple levels of instructions, but that's some forward feedback that I could give to the teacher to be able to say, you know what, he has difficulties if there's multiple instructions. If you can write it on the board, he'll be able to follow it a little bit clearer. Very simple, simple practice.
One of the things about this book is this, it's this intriguing slant to figuring out effective parenting, understanding the child, the occupational therapy way. Can you open that up a bit for me?
Occupational therapy was born out of the idea that occupations are what we do every day in life. And occupations are not necessarily our job. It's what we need to accomplish. So it can be something as simple as getting dressed as part of our occupation as a person. Children, their occupation, part of their occupation is play. Going to school is part of their occupation. We do have a job, which becomes part of our work occupation when we grow up. One of the things with occupational therapy is you have to acknowledge when somebody is trying to accomplish something, you need to acknowledge what they have, the skills that they have as a person first and foremost. So what skills do they have physically, mentally, emotionally? How do they experience the world as the person? And then you put that person in the environment that they're trying to accomplish whatever task they're trying to do. So for instance, if you take the person and the environment would be the school, then the third part is looking at the task that they're trying to accomplish. So that's where occupational therapy comes in, because they really focus, and occupational therapy really focuses on looking at the person as a whole and looking at all the environments that that person needs to be in, and then looking at all the tasks that they need to do. And when those overtwine into the same location, almost like a Venn diagram, the center is what we call occupation.
And so in understanding a child the occupational therapy way, you use a lot of stories. Can you just give me one little story about this particular way of looking at a kid or something they do?
Well, one example that I have that I find is really poignant is if you are trying to teach a child how to read. So first you need to make sure that they have the ability to read. So you always want to make sure that they can see, that they have the ability to recognize letters and words. That's their physical ability. Then you're looking at the environment that you're trying to teach them how to read in. And if you think about the environment that you're teaching them, if you were to try and teach them how to read on a roller coaster, right, that's not necessarily as conducive. So your task that you're trying to teach is reading, the environment you're doing it on is a roller coaster, and their physical abilities, but those don't necessarily match. So what you need to do is you need to change one of those to be able to make it so that it's conducive to the learning that you're trying to accomplish. So changing the environment from a roller coaster to a quiet room makes it a little bit easier for a child to be able to read in that environment. And so when I try to talk to parents, you know, about this, trying to explain this environment, it's looking at a child being in a classroom that may have 25 kids in it and having a lot of loud noises, a lot of moving pieces, moving puzzles. To some kids, that's like being on a roller coaster. So if they're having difficulties learning in that situation, if you take them and have them in a quieter space, it might be more effective for their learning, right?
And I wonder if you could now tell me three things that fortify you as a mother. What are three things that help you in that role?
I think one of the strongest ones, and I think I've come through this through writing this book even more actually in the last couple of years, is a sense of curiosity. So a curiosity, when children behave, I always have this sense of what is causing this behavior, what happened, what in the environment, what in their physical being, what triggered them, what maybe prompted this to happen. And then you always say, is there something that could be different that could, you know, not have this happen? Or how can we help them resolve this and what's going on in their body? So that sense of curiosity is huge for me. The second one I have is patience. We do have to remember that our children are children. And so We, and I talk to parents about this a lot, depending on how old you are, you've had years and years of experience of learning how to regulate your body in all different environments. And children have only been around for, you know, a few years. So, you know, if they've only been around for 6 years, they've only learned so many things in so many environments. So lots is still new for them. So having a sense of patience to let our kids be able to experience the world in different ways and recognizing them. And the third is just enjoyment and fun, because, you know, children are fun. They see the world through a different view than we do. And many times it's of excitement, things that they're experiencing, the awe. And so we don't want to negate that part of their life. So we want to encourage them to experience the world in that fun way and see the world through their eyes sometimes, not necessarily through our own eyes as adults.
I'm glad you ended with fun, because that was my experience. There's untold stories now that we all share. And I think I'm going to study this and maybe give the book to all my kids. So thank you so much, Sabrina.
Thank you so much, Judy.